Hello, everybody, and welcome back to another episode of the Cool Down. Today, we've got a good squad in the house. We've got Nick, he's present. We've got Wunga Dengasaurus, he's alive. We've got Mosa reporting live to you from Stamford Bridges, or no, Stamford Bridge, Chelsea's training ground. We've got Nick. It looks like he had a great weekend celebrating his newly appointment of his tax job. And then we've got Cyril, the financial man, looking very lonely, but I'm pretty sure he's got a devil's peak there. Am I right?
Oh, yeah. No, always, man. You know what I mean? Always in hand.
Devils united.
You know, red devils are marching on right now. So, man, I'm, man. Made lost. And they might be a lost as well.
Otherwise, how's the weekend for everyone? You guys have a good one?
Yeah, man.
Good one on my side. South African problems.
Guys, also, I forgot to mention it was Mosa's birthday on the weekend. Can we just give a little round of applause? Congrats, Mosa 31. That's a good job. Matt's getting flashbacks. He's like, I was 31 once.
Yeah, I remember 31. what an innocent, wonderful time that was.
I can bring everybody up on 35, so it's fine, Matt. You can also join me at 25, Chum.
Okay, sweet. I'll do it.
Yeah, forever 25. Right.
But seeing as it was Mosa's birthday on the weekend, we got to kick off with the Fulham-Chelsea game. Mosa, hey, they got the result over the line in the end, but they made hard work of it.
Yeah, they definitely did. I got to thank them for the 3 points. You know, it always adds to the bag to have these 3 points in contention and actually to take them on. It also
adds to the birthday celebrations. Come on. I'm interrupting you. But whenever I look at the fixture list, I always look at the fixture closest to my birthday and if they're going to reward me with 3 points. So I just wanted to check if you're happy with that.
Yeah, fair, man. Like they did reward me with the 3 points, but I wasn't as happy and as satisfied about the performance on the day, to be honest. Taking on a team like Fulham, who's fighting in the relegation zone, you'd think that Chelsea would come up with a lot more confidence, come out with a lot more like expression, and it wasn't there for a lot of the game. It felt like even with the 10 men that Fulham went down to, we were still not actually breaking down Fulham's defenses and actually getting into good positions to create opportunities. So that was the something for us to work on, Chelsea to focus on over the next couple of weeks, because that's going to be the easiest team we face in the next couple of weeks. And next up, we've got Leicester today, which is going to be a completely different bag. And if we do see the same performance that we had over the weekend, potentially it might be a differing result, and the 3 points might elude us this time.
You know,
Musa, can I ask, man? It's been burning since Saturday. Timo Werner, guys, we need to address it now, because there was, I would say, two opportunities, right? There was the one where Graham Hudson-Odoi makes a nice pass over the defense. And then Timo Werner traps it, nice, cool. But then the next touch, it's gone. It's already gone to the defender, you know what I mean? Mm. And then later on, where it's a breakaway, where he just needs to keep composed.
Hit the target.
At least make the goalkeeper work. If the goalkeeper saves, we say goalkeeper, whatever, you know what I mean? But when you don't even hit the target, that's very questionable for a signing that cost you £50 million. It just reminds me of Fernando Torres so much, man. I don't know why.
Yeah.
Like these players are so good from the clubs that they were at, and they've come with so much expectation. You know, Fernando Torres, when he came to Chelsea, he was probably like, what, second leading goal scorer in the Premier League, or probably leading goal scorer in the Premier League when we just last season at Liverpool.
One of the best strikers in the world.
Werner was number two. Werner was number two in Bundesliga after Lewandowski with what, 25 league goals, and then he comes to Chelsea and 10 Premier League games without a goal, man. That's
many. A lot of strikers have struggled at Chelsea. You go further back, a lot of strikers have struggled at Chelsea. Remember Hernan Crespo was at Chelsea for a while. He was
Mateo Kesman.
Yeah,
Kesman was sniffing things on the side there, bro. That's a different story. Maybe
Werner's got all the hurt.
I mean, other than Drogba, who was phenomenal, and you know, he was his time at Chelsea was the best part of his career. Every other striker who's gone there over the past few years has really seemed to struggle to kind of step it up. Even when Shevchenko was there, I mean, I know it was towards the end of his career, and that, but he wasn't, you know, you look at Cavani having gone to United and he's still doing it. Shevchenko went to Chelsea and he really kind of faded. Torres was the same. It was, I mean, remember there was that joke, there was that website that was running at the time, has Torres scored for Chelsea yet? And it was live for an awful long time before it got taken down. And I think
Douglas Costa,
there's obviously, there's something there. The confidence is an issue. Yeah, the confidence is a huge issue for Werner at the moment. I mean, he seems, he gets himself into the right positions. He's doing what he's trying to do. The muscle memory is there. He gets to the right place. But it seems like when the chance is in front of him, he's just not finding it. And I don't know. That's a really tough thing to fix. And as
Matt,
a manager,
it comes down to corporate club versus family club, Matt. That's what it comes down to.
Are we doing this Liverpool's a family club thing? Liverpool does the books.
But in terms of what I've heard Frank Lampard say, you know, you talk about Diego Costa. He's probably the only other one who banged in the goal.
Yeah.
Not as prolific as your Didier Drogba's, but I mean, yeah. If you look at, I mean, Frank literally said, you know, the misses that he is missing. We're talking about Timo Werner, is specifically, you know, repetitive training. You know, repetitive shots. You know. Day in, day out, they're on the training field and they're doing that day in, day out. And, you know, he sort of defended him, but at the same time, it felt like he was sort of saying, you know, he's got to get it right eventually. And Celo, you said it, £50 million, you know, he needs to get it right. You know, £50 million for a Chelsea striker. Chelsea are one of the biggest teams, not in England, one of the biggest teams in the world. He has to get it right. So, you know, there's no excuse. There's no excuse.
Fraud alert. Fraud alert, according to Tabang, saying fraud definitely alert. Man's a fraud. You know, one thing I want to mention, guys, there's been a lot of shit giving towards Frank Lampard's son. But you can see after the weekend why the guy gets the nod. It's a player you trust. He does things. He does things.
He's the most consistent player this season, man. So, yeah, I'll give
props. I've seen. I like Mason Mount. I honestly like the way he plays. I can't understand why people. Well, or genuine. I can't understand why people don't like the guy.
I think people feel that he's overplayed sometimes.
Yeah, I think that.
But he's doing the business.
He catches so much game time when all the other signings around him, the new signings that we do spend all this money on, don't catch as much game time, and that questions. You know, like everybody then questions. What Mount's affiliation or what he has with Lampard, and that's kind of where the questions come about Mount and his performance. But as like a 21-year-old, very very young professional, he's got the right character. I think he's got the right character to actually try and carry a team, and also try and, you know, win games for the team. And that's in the same breath. That's what Frank Lampard was when he was 21 years old. So I see why the questions do arise about his performances directly, but I support him, man. Like, Mount is actually a breath of fresh air in the Chelsea makeup, and he's contributed more than some of the other players that we've bought for these kind of amounts. So I'd definitely keep him there, keep him competing in the fashion that he is.
Mossa, Christian Pulisic, what's going on there, man? Because that guy... because on his day, I know there's a lot going on right now, and Frank Lampard not knowing how to put anything together, and I think that's like really messing up with the feng shui of the team and the players individually, personally speaking. But what's going on there? How did he perform on the weekend? Was he good enough? What's the scenario? Because Odoi is sitting on bench, and I don't know why that guy's not starting from the beginning.
He should be playing, man.
Yeah. So for me, Pulisic is playing too much PlayStation, man. There's certain things that he's got to do. Which are like, they're going too far and too much. He takes too many touches. He takes too many turns. He goes for the more adventurous option as opposed to trying to, you know, keep it clean and keep it smart. And sometimes that's a frustrating thing. He is a quality talent, but sometimes he takes it too far and he looks like an American kid that's been playing too much PlayStation. Put him in a soccer field and he's trying to do all the tricks from PlayStation on the field. And sometimes it doesn't work out that way. I'd still try and build a team around a player of his nature, but I'd also try and make sure that he limits his contact on the ball as much as possible. Because He does. When he does lay the ball off early, he does get players into great positions to attack. He does create a lot of movement around him. It's just sometimes he takes it a bit too far, man. It takes an extra touch, takes an extra two touches when it's not necessary. But, yeah, I'd keep him in, man. In terms of attacking options, he knows the club, he knows the history better than all the other players in front of him. And, yeah, he's got the talent. It's just too much PlayStation, man. Somebody should take his PlayStation away from him.
But no, but the problem is with his PlayStation is he's got no one to play against while he's playing PlayStation, if you know what I mean. There's no one in the club to sit him down and say, boy, I'm going to teach you how to play PlayStation now. There's no one there doing that. So when I get the feeling when he's going out, he's going, I need to be the main man. I need to step up. I need to carry this team. So it looks like every time he's getting the ball, he's trying to do something instead of trying to, like, there's nothing else around him that's working. It's all in front of the defenders until he gets it. He's very direct, very forward. And he's like, hey, flip, Maradona just died. I want to take this number 10 jersey and be the next name. And it feels like he's trying too hard. I think, again, I bring this back because, you know, I love bringing Liverpool into every conversation, but I bring this back had he gone there, you know, he would have been learning from the other guys. Not currently how they've done in the last 3 years.
Say, you're going to learn a lot from Firmino at the moment, isn't he? Eh? I think on that family-run club, you know, he'll have an aunt to come around, give him a hug,
and a grandmother making him pies. Yeah, and on that note, seeing as you're very cheerful today, Matt, I wonder why you're quite cheerful. I mean, Sheffield United. We're always going to say it was going to be an easy victory in the end, but they did it. They did it, and they, you know, they look good doing it.
Yeah, it was a solid performance. I mean, I was worried. There was, you know, like I said last week, I expected us to win, but there was always that worry that it could have ended up 1-1 again, like we've been doing lately. But no, it was a good performance. The team played well. We saw a lot of what's made Spurs exciting during the course of the season. Harry Kane obviously getting in a goal, making space between four defenders out of nowhere, putting it away. That was great. Obviously, the Ndombele goal is the massive talking point. It was absolutely ridiculous. It defied all physics and rules. It felt like it should have been a yellow card. It was that. You know, kind of gratuitous. It was
unruly.
The poor keeper with his flailing hands, like, you know, it must have been horrible. But I think that capped a fantastic performance for him. Ndombele was phenomenal throughout the game. He just bossed the midfield. He was making really clever passes, getting into the right position, finding space, just doing all the things. And it kind of typified the performance across the side. There were some really great individual performances. Højbjerg was, as usual, just ticking things over. He just does everything right. Reguilón is really becoming a hugely important player for us. He's so consistent down the left. He's really bombs forward well, puts defence under a lot of pressure, and he's got the finished product. His crosses are phenomenal. So it was a good performance. It was frustrating to concede the goal because it was – sort of,
sorry, I don't know what Nick's doing, bro. Nick's been playing with his head like for 12 minutes. What's going on there, Nick?
Get it right, son.
It's okay, you look good, man.
Don't worry.
It's okay, as you were, man.
No, that's cool. I'm worried now. Are you trying to hint me? Is there something wrong with mine?
All of us, I don't know. Maybe he's sending us all a message.
but Matt, the whole issue now, I've been reading a lot, man, this past week about Bale, man. In training ground saying that, hey, man, you need to do this and this, otherwise I'm going to send you back to Madrid.
Yeah, I mean, look, it's really hard to kind of see, you know for certain what's truth coming out of the training grounds and that, but it's definitely clear that Bale's not playing as much as a lot of us had expected by this. But we knew when he arrived, he was out of fitness. He just had an injury. He hadn't played a lot of football. So we knew it was going to take him a while to come into, wow, Ronnie, we're doing essays today.
Ronnie's been waiting, bro. He's been waiting.
Oh, we've missed you too, mate. Bale is an interesting question. I think there's because also at the moment as well, I mean, obviously every Spurs fan loves Bale. We love what he did for us. We love what he represents. He represents like a golden era in being a Spurs fan and that. But you've also got to ask yourself, who would you take out the side to put him in at the moment and in what he's done for us and the flashes of the few minutes he's had, and he hasn't had a lot of time on the field, but he hasn't looked himself. He hasn't looked at his absolute best. I don't know if I'd go so far to say he's a fraud. I think he's done a fair bit in the game.
But, everybody's a fraud today, teams. I think if we rank the levels of fraud, he's probably the biggest in terms of.
I agree.
I mean, look at what he's done over the course of his career. He's a phenomenal player. He's just clearly not. He's not doing. He's. I mean, look at his stats.
Guys, Bale is scored in UEFA Champions League finals. Ask Claudio's goalkeeper.
Yes.
Yeah, I was there. Yeah. I was there.
He's a phenomenal player, but he's not quite hitting it. And if we were to see him go, it would be sad in the sense of what it represents and the memory and on an emotional level. But it wouldn't affect the football side of it. You know, he's not. He's definitely not affecting our
football. Does Bale not have 3 Champions Leagues?
Yeah, he's done all right. I mean, even his time in Real Madrid, he was averaging a goal every 2 games, which is pretty phenomenal considering he was in and out of the side. You know, this is a player who's done a bit. But at the same time, you've got to kind of, you're only as, and it's kind of almost to me similar to the Michael Owen question, where Michael Owen was a phenomenal player for 4 or 5 years, and then he had a very kind of soft last 4 or 5 years of his career. And Bale's kind of going through the same patch where he exploded onto the scene, did some phenomenal stuff, had some great years. And then now for the last couple of years, he hasn't really done a lot. And you wonder what he'll be remembered for. Will he be remembered for, you know, the hat-tricks for Spurs back in the day and the consistency he gave Real Madrid in his early time there? Or will he be remembered as someone who kind of faded from it, concentrating on his golf too much? So it is a tough one. It's a shame if we were to see him go without having kind of hit some screamers in for us. But if he was to leave, it wouldn't affect the Savadi. What I'm more concerned about is the potential, interested in, I guess, is the Ali to PSG one. It seems, you know, that rumor's gotten quite fierce, especially now that Poch has signed up. And I think if he does go there, it'll probably be a really good move for him. But again, it would be another sad thing for Spurs fans to see him go. He's been a phenomenal servant for the club.
I love the kid to go, man. I love the kid to go. He has a whole game.
No, he has to.
He posted on social media the whole time. They didn't play and he was like, he was all sad, you know what I mean? Come on, just let the guy play. Eriksen is keen to come back. Get Eriksen on loan and then Ali go.
Yeah, but surely Ali comes to Newcastle. We were actually supposed to sign him. I think Matt, you'll if you recall the story, the first team that was in for him, I think it was MK Dons, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, you played for MK Dons.
Yeah. So we were in for him, and he was set to sign. And then I think a day or two before he was about to sign, Spurs came in, and I think they doubled the money. And it's a no-brainer.
Can I just say? Can I just say? You know what? When I make everything about Liverpool, I've got a good reason to do it. I don't know what Nick's reason is.
I'm going to take my victories where I can. I've got Steve Bruce as the coach. Come on.
Yeah.
small victories, eh?
Yeah, small victories. I mean, if we're looking at the whole Bale sort of thing, I liked him in his early days. You know, he felt like, you know, Dragon Ball Z when Goku was still training. He was like, that's where Bale was. You know, he was training before he was the Super Saiyan. He was doing his thing. He went to Real Madrid. His hair went blonde. His ears started flapping a bit more. And all of a sudden, he's like, I'm too good for this place. I'm too good for football. And I'm a golfer. I feel like that's where we're at now with him.
Yeah.
We're not even sure what he actually brings to the games at the moment. Like back in the day, you used to have his blistering pace tearing up the field. You used to have his left foot, which was magnificent for free kicks and for, you know, open play. Now, I'm not too sure if you were to put him in the squad, what is he actually going to give you? I've seen him play for Tottenham a couple of times, passing sideways, passing backwards. I haven't seen the expression of pace that we've known from Bale or even that left foot doing its job.
The connection we have with him now is more emotional than football. It's you know, he was a superstar for us. He earned that massive move to Real Madrid by doing incredible things for Tottenham. But now he's for me, he's not even in our starting 11 at the moment. I think he could be. I think he still has the potential. I think he's shown in the past that he's got the talent to be a phenomenal player, but it's not quite there at the moment. Whether it's fitness issues, maybe it's just been too long and maybe he has lost it a bit. As you get older, you do lose that bit of pace, and that was a big part of his game. Maybe that's a big reason why he's not as effective now.
You've never played with Mossa, clearly, because that boy is still buzzing there. He's not slowing down. Like,
you know, that's,
Nick, you must sign this boy. You must sign him.
Forever 25, Nick. Forever 25.
The other statement.
One thing I want to talk about before we move on from the Spurs sort of conversation is that, you know, we give Mourinho a lot of shit for how they set up. But again, we're looking at the table. They're 4 points away. We're looking at Ndombele. You mentioned how great he was in the week and the goal that he's done. But if you look at him from when he took over to when Ndombele is now, he's arguably one of the key players for Spurs. And you got to say that there's something there that's happening from how Mourinho's handled the situation.
Yeah, big time. And it's not just Ndombele. Mourinho has improved a lot of our players. Individually, you look at the likes of Aurier, you look at Sissoko, to a big extent, Kane and Son. Don't get me wrong, they were fantastic players before. But Mourinho has added a certain level of something to each of them. Yeah. Dyer's game, you know, I was always kind of never convinced by Dyer at centre-back. But under Mourinho, he's found that position and made it his own. And across the squad, there's players who've improved individually under Mourinho. And you can, you know, there's questions to be asked about some of the tactics and the approach to certain games. And there we go. Happy birthday, Mossa.
Hey, Nick, we shared a message in the group over the weekend of you with the trophy, wearing a lot of clothes. So we might need to share that with you after the show, just so you're part of the joke as well.
I sent it to him. He saw it. He asked me why I have naked pictures of him. So I had to. I don't know what to say.
Yeah, sorry, but, Matt.
Just going back to, sorry, Matt, just on the Ndombele talk, you know, I watched that documentary that they had, All or Nothing with Spurs, and he was very much last season a very fringe sort of player in the squad. And I think he had questioned why he left his previous club to come to Spurs because, you know, he came for big money. I think Mourinho was even called in together with himself, not at the same time. One with Mourinho first to say, listen, we've spent a lot of money. Why isn't he playing? And then secondly, to sort of keep the player happy. You know, Daniel Levy had a big task there because, you know, obviously the boy's got talent. You know, he wouldn't have been bought by Spurs for that amount of money. But, you know,
is that where they found him on Britain's Got Talent?
He's a record signing, isn't he?
He's definitely a record signing. Yeah, £67 million pounds.
Yeah, but I mean, he always had a bit of something, and I think if there's any coach in world football to get the best out of you, it is Mourinho. But you're either going to get it with him, or if you don't get it, you're out the door. So I'm thankful for the fact that he's actually got it with him, because if it never worked out, like Dele Alli, he's out the window at the moment. So
Mourinho expects 100%. You know, he doesn't he won't. And for me, that was a big contrast when Wenger was still at Arsenal and Mourinho was at Chelsea. The big difference, and it was sort of like I heard someone explain it once, is to say that when they walk off the training pitch, Mourinho will walk up to a player and they can have had the best day of their life on the pit, on the training ground, but he'll say, you missed a few passes, you need to tighten up your short game, you know, you need to get better with your short passes, to focus exactly the one thing they got wrong, he'll pick it out. And Wenger would walk off and go up to any player and pick out their strength and say, you were really good at your crosses today, focus on that, never mind that they weren't marking, they weren't tracking back, whatever. And it's kind of that focus on improving every tiny thing and expecting your entire game to be perfect. And I think that's why he does get the best out of players, the players who respond to it. And obviously Ndombele has, he's really stepped up his game. His all-round game has come along hugely. Not to say he wasn't talented before. It's not like we found him on the street and they've just turned him into a footballer. He was a solid footballer before.
There were a lot of clubs after him. I think United were looking at him. I think Liverpool, there were a couple of clubs looking at him.
Yeah. And he's repaid Mourinho's kind of faith in him, and he's really stepped up and he's proved himself. He's an essential part of the team now. I mean, the Sheffield United game, I mean, obviously the opposition is limited, so you don't want to read too much into it. But I think that's not the first time he's done that for us. He's been playing really solid games for a while now. He bosses a midfielder. Matt, him and Hoybier together are really good.
The opposition were limited. What are you saying about my team?
Well, I wasn't trying to talk about your team.
I was about to ask you, Claudio, you said all these teams were in for them. Newcastle weren't in for them. We're a big club.
Let's talk about the game that was a big fixture on the weekend between two big clubs, actual big clubs. And you know, the thing for me is when we're looking at this game, it's a game that one of the clubs is turning into a Soweto derby and really making it a boring game. And that's clearly Manchester United. It feels like there's all this hype and no delivery on the park. That's what it is.
Liverpool were at home. I mean, it's up to Liverpool to make it.
Matt, there's a way in which you set up. There's a way in which you set up. And they set up for the last 5, 6, 7 years. They've turned this into the Soweto derby. That's what they've done. They sit deep. They're nice.
I don't agree with that. Firmino, how many shots did he have?
No. Wanga, to add on to what you think, did any of their front three have a shot on target?
Oh, we did. Yeah. Firmino did. He did have. Whoa. And Firmino did. He just hit it. He mishit it. It was a back pass to De Gea, but he did have one. He did. So don't.
Firmino could have passed in Robertson twice on two occasions. I remember. And guys, I don't know what he did. What he decided to do. Those were definite goals. Those are typical Liverpool goals. And I don't know what he was doing there. I think he would have won the game, literally.
If Liverpool are going to say, yeah, it's the way United set up that ruined it. I mean, for one thing, when Mourinho says stuff like that, everybody's like, oh, you're a sour grape, da, da, da. But, you know, like now, because it's a family-run club, they get to call that nonsense.
Exactly. Because it's a family-run club. You know, we need to feel sorry for them. For what? For what reason? Yeah,
and that's 3 games in a row you guys haven't scored. Have all three sides been coming straight from the Soweto derby? I think Liverpool needs to ask themselves serious questions about why they're not putting the goals. Ball in the back of the net. It's a serious
And the biggest thing, guys, I'm hating now, right? I'm not a Liverpool fan, but I'm a football fan, is people are coming out to criticize Thiago. What the flip, guys? How can you criticize Thiago? I saw some stupid tweet about Thiago is not the solution to unlocking Liverpool's front three. Thiago in 24 league games last season for Bayern only had 4 goals and 0 assists. Bloody hell, Thiago is a deep lying playmaker. He's deep lying playmaker, and
he's no Jonjo Shelvey. That's all I can tell you.
Don't come with your shit. You're going to get time to speak about your team. Right now, again, we're speaking about two big teams. Okay, two big teams. That's what we're talking about.
Hey, Cello, I think, you know what? I think people are, you know, remember when they signed Thiago, there was a yay and a hype. And every time when James Milner was on the, they got that video of James Milner, everyone was going crazy about that. Then he got injured. Yeah. Now he's playing. Now he played, and then he got the opportunity to play. I think everyone was just like, it was sort of like a.
Who's bashing him? Who's bashing him? Because when I was watching him play, he looked like a general. He looked like a general that no woman wanted to be with.
Your legend, Dietmar Hamann, said that.
But that guy, remember, he also played for Newcastle.
I get what you're saying, but I'm just saying the expectations people were putting. I agree with what you're saying, Solo. I'm just saying that what people were, you know, they were hyping up like he's going to give Liverpool 20 assists in one game. And it's just what you get. Look at this.
Guys, it's his third start of the season. He's had his injuries. All these people making noise are full of shit. Time to jog on. When I was talking about the game and how it was set up and turning it into Soweto derby, all I implied was, two big teams, one of them playing with a small team mentality is what I was saying, and waiting for their chances. Because if we're looking at it, I'm not having goes there. I'm being honest here. We're going to Anfield. No fans, no center halves. They're playing a midfield three that haven't played together the whole season. United should really be having a go at them. And for the first 30 minutes, had we taken one or two opportunities that came our way, that was all Liverpool 30 minutes. 30 minutes inside of the game, Liverpool didn't do anything. They didn't take their chance. It fell to Firmino. There's a lot going on inside the man's head, similar to what a Timo Werner is pretty much going through. And, you know, unfortunately, we didn't take the chance. And then United were like, wait, is that all they got for us? Oh, now we can start playing. And, you know, those two big chances that came in the second half came when Thiago, unfortunately, who was at that time doing stuff for us, Shaqiri like started dropping off. We brought on Curtis Jones. You got Thiago now, who's expected to be a hardcore CDM, like defensive midfielder, when both of them are playing center back. And that's where those opportunities came from. And that's at the end of the day, both. And I've got to be honest though, from that perspective, if I'm a Man United fan, surely they're going to be happy with the point because they're still top and they're still doing their thing. But if I'm a United fan, I am pissed off going to an Anfield knowing they were there to be robbed and broken a record of that Liverpool haven't lost at least a couple of years. Like, how many games is it? 60-something odd games? They were there for the taking. They didn't take it. So from my perspective, that's what I'm talking
about. Claudio, who had the better chances?
I said you had the better chances. Did you not hear me say that? I said you had two chances.
Exactly. Exactly. If you have chances to win, right, and you don't take your chances to win, that is on you for not taking those chances. If we had zero chances...
But those chances can be taken if they come with a more positive, more belief. I don't think
if we had zero chances, then I can understand what you're saying. But the fact that we had the best chances and that De Gea only made one save,
guys,
your goalkeeper made two saves, then we can say that, okay, Ole's tactics almost worked because he just needed one of those chances to go in as we 1-0 to Man United. You know what I mean? But nah, man. No.
Look, Taban's saying the thing.
Claudio, that's Taban. Listen, man.
You're welcome back.
I think you're being very much emotional, and you've been drinking too much from Klopp's Kool-Aid.
Let's assess Liverpool's situation, but listen, right, Jose Mourinho plays
Man City, right? What happens? Man City have all the chances, right? Spurs have two chances and they score 2-0, right? Jose Mourinho as a coach has been lauded as being one of the best coaches in history. He played Barcelona with Inter Milan, with all those players, and he was playing defensively. But what happened? He went to the final and he won a treble. Football has different ways of setting up, right? You can disagree or agree if you like the way a certain team sets up or not. But at the end of the day, if it's effective in getting the result that's required, then you have to give that person credit for setting up in that manner. Right.
So then you were happy with the point. Is that what you're telling me? Because if you set yourself up and you came away with the point, then wait. Based on that analogy,
we missed the best chances.
Let me finish. You spoiled the analogy. No. You just said your exact words were: if you set up and you come away with the point,
Steve Bruce is after.
You didn't come away with the results.
We missed the best chances. If we didn't create chances, I'd be angry. But we missed the best.
Ultimately, this is a lot to talk about for a game that finished 0-0.
It's the same thing as the way Spurs played against you guys, right? What happened? Bervine hits the post. That's a chance that they missed. That's what we 2-1 to Spurs, your record could have ended then. You know, and what happens? Liverpool scores in the first minute.
Don't confuse what I'm saying.
Claudio, Man United had the best chances.
Okay, I didn't. I literally said United had the best chances. You're not mistaken, but I'm trying to say.
What you're saying is not right.
Okay. can I just say what I want to say?
Let's hear from our other friends and what they say.
No, listen here, Selo. All I'm saying is, now that you give... Oh, please drink more so I can talk. Listen, what I'm saying is, that the setup, right? I was saying, irrelevant of the result, I'm not blaming Liverpool's performance on how United set up. Liverpool have their issues, and I'm going to talk about the issues right now. All I'm saying is what you were saying with regards to, if you're going to set up and you walk away with the result, Mourinho sets up in a certain way, he walks away, he wins a trophy, done. He's won the trophy. It's justified. The means justifies the ends. In this scenario here, all I'm saying is Liverpool felt ripe for United to go and then attack them. They were cautious. They got their point and they will take it. Fantastic. When we're looking at Liverpool, we're looking at how they set up. There's a lot wrong there. There's in the midfield three. Yeah, we're losing two of our engines. They're both playing center back. They both did fantastically well, by the way, at center back. So I'm not critiquing that. But when you do that, we lose something in the midfield and the front three don't benefit. Yeah. Now, the biggest issue about the front three, when we're talking about it, you know, if we're looking at other clubs, and Jamie Carragher said this, and this is what I thought was, this was brilliant. When you're looking at other clubs and you've got a front three, generally they last there for two seasons max, two, three seasons, your front three. Afterwards, they get changed. This front three have now been together for four seasons. This is going on four now. So it is very unusual for a front three to be kept together for such a long time.
So long,
when you're looking, when you're looking at Salah, for example, early second half, and for me that highlighted exactly what Liverpool are going through, is that Salah was in the box one-on-one with Luke Shaw. I'm not talking Wan-Bissaka, who, by the way, in my opinion, I think is the best defending right back in the league. And that's quite a statement. But defending right back, there's no one that beats him. I like how he closes down. I like how he gets tight. He's very hard. I mean, the only time Mane beat him was with a 1-2. Apart from that, it was difficult. But when Salah's one-on-one with Luke Shaw and the Oak is in the box and he decides to turn back and pass the ball, for me, that there's something very wrong. I don't know if it's the chemistry that's waning. We look at Firmino. He's all over the place. He had in the first half, you know, he could have played a ball out wide to Thiago. He didn't. He had a shot. Wrong decision. He had Robertson on the left-hand side. He could have done that. He didn't do that. You know, so there were a couple of things that are just not gelling at the moment, and that's because we make shifting, we're moving pieces around, and our normal team aren't playing together. But is it all worry? No, I'm not saying it's all worry. We're still in there with the shots. If it was any other league, if it was a Man United, if it was a Man City, you know, and they've lost three of their four centre-halves, would we say, like, would they be up top still competing for the league? So for me, from that perspective, I was going, okay, Liverpool are still, they're still doing all right. There's still a lot to come. But yeah, that's all. That's my analysis. I'm done, guys. I'm done. Cool.
No, I think listen, right? You know, as a fan, right? You would like there's what you would like your team to do, right? But then there's also sometimes you just need to ask yourself, why is the coach doing this, right? And try looking from the coach's point of view and try and understand what the coach is doing, right? Me personally, a person like Pogba is wasted on out of position. You know what I mean? He's our best midfield in terms of spraying the passes long, short. You know, he can do it with both feet. You know, I don't like to see him out of position. You know, those two times I think when McTominay made him misplace the pass. You know, and I was like, flip, man! Like that would never happen with Pogba. And luckily, obviously, Liverpool didn't take advantage of those misplaced passes, you know. So from that point of view, in terms of getting Pogba in the midfield, I feel Solskjaer missed a beat there. And then also, secondly, by playing Rashford up top, man, I know the whole point was to use his pace to advantage. But the problem is when he plays in a central striking role, he doesn't have the attributes that a Cavani or a Martial have in that role, because at least they can protect the ball better and they can occupy the defenders better. You know what I mean? So in that regard, it wasn't great, but also I need to look at it from Solskjaer's point of view and say, okay, the coach decided to go with this method, and this method was, you know, let's see what they can do for the first couple of for the first half, basically, and then second half, let's try and get on the ball more and maybe create some more chances. And we did, you know what I mean? We had the free kick from Bruno. We had some pass that Martial put to Bruno went out for a corner. We had a couple of things that we were trying to put together in the second half that we just didn't do in the first half. But I just think that's how Solskjaer set up. And seemingly this season, as opposed to last season. Last season, we did so well against top six sides, right? We drew against Liverpool and then we lost to Liverpool. Otherwise, every other team, we basically either drew against them or beat them. We beat Chelsea twice, beat City twice. You know what I mean? Beat Tottenham twice. This season is the opposite. You know what I mean? This season we've lost to Arsenal, lost to Spurs, kept a clean sheet against Chelsea, kept a clean sheet against Man City, kept a clean sheet against Liverpool, but 0-0. You know what I mean? We didn't win. So that shows you that, okay, cool. Maybe he's looking at it in a different manner, but then we're doing better against the smaller sides, which isn't bad. You know, we got the point. We're still top of the league. Unless Leicester obviously beat Chelsea, which I think they are going to do. So I think Leicester might be top of the league by the end of the night.
But yeah, to Nick's, Matt's point, though, it was a dull game. And I don't know how we created so much airtime about this game. It was really, really bad. So it's a derby.
What's this? Nick's uncle's comment there, man. It's interesting, man. I didn't know about this.
About Salah.
Man.
No, man, yeah. Listen, that's what I'm saying. With this front three, it's about that time that something gets changed. One of them is going to go. One of them is going to come in. I am very fearful of a Firmino sort of situation. Yes, Wonga?
I was going to say, I was going to even ask you, Claudio, what do you think? Because I think Sane is probably in this, not Sane, mine is in the same position as well. I think he's, I remember there was a time he was a bit aggregated, but not, agitated, not getting any, I think he was worried about his, I'm not worried, but he was not happy about his contract. I mean, they gave him the money, but now he's 29 now.
Yeah.
He's also 29, 2 years left on his contract, if I'm not mistaken. I think it ends in 2023. I'm not sure how many years Salah has left, but that's Liverpool's best two players on the pitch, and those are the guys banging in the goals. So do you know? I mean, what do you think was going to probably happen in the next 1 or 2 years? You think they're going to extend the contract, or they're going to look to take him out? Like Gini Van Alden was also very undecisive with that. So I don't know if he signed a contract yet with them. Extension, but he's also
no, so yeah, so Gini, yeah. So Gini Van Holden has been offered a new one. He doesn't want to take it because he believes he deserves more money. And if you look at the amount he's getting, I think he's only getting not even half of what Salah is getting, for example. Salah's at 29 as well. I think money, they're all getting to that age now.
How much has Salah got? Sorry, just to cut
me. Salah's close, I think it's like 200,000 or something like that.
Something, yeah.
Yeah, so Salah's at this point now where he's trying to maximize what he can get. Let's face it, he's not going to have another season like he had at Liverpool when he came in there. It's not going to reach those heights. So, and the issue I have with Firmino right now is if you're looking at the front three and you're going, and Matt's going to jump on this, and I defend Firmino. I love the boy. I love him. But what I'm saying is I'm fearful for the fact that out of the three, you're not going to get rid of a Mane or Salah before you get rid of a Firmino. And that's the sad fact. The issue is, and you look at what Firmino actually offers, is pressing in the front, and he did it on the weekend. He did do it, but he's not doing it at the same level as he has been doing it. And as soon as you come in and you go, okay, you're not expected to be an out-and-out goal scorer. You're meant to create more. And I know the midfield's not functioning, so it makes his job a little bit harder. But if you're not even chipping in with the odd goal that you have been doing and you're not closing like you would, it does become a bit of a problem. So I am worried from that for him from that perspective. But that's enough about that. I think what Nicholas was saying about Pogba playing, you know, for me, I thought Pogba was your best player going forward on the weekend. And it was interesting 100%. That if he's your best player, why aren't you guys just getting a CDM playing next to him and let him thrive through the middle? Why isn't that happening?
You see, that's the problem I was saying is the fact that Solskjaer, right, he needs to also remember what he did post-lockdown, right? After lockdown, first game, he starts, cool, Pogba's on the bench, he plays Matic, whatever. But after that game, he started Pogba and Matic probably basically in every single game. And we won so many games with Pogba and Matic as the midfield pair. Cool, maybe Matic doesn't have the legs anymore. So then put him together with Fred, you know, because McTominay, I love McTominay's passion. Eh? I love McTominay's passion, but honestly, Pogba at least so much more. Pogba's, you know, playing at a higher level. He can make he can make the passes, and he's also tracking back. You know what I mean? He's doing well defensively. He's strong in the midfield. But yeah, Solskjaer needs to, you know, Solskjaer makes some really bad decisions, some questionable decisions. You know what I mean? You know, he's picking his Scandinavian brother Lindelof ahead of Bailly.
They did the job.
They did. But obviously, before the game, you cringe and you're like, why are you doing this? You know what I mean? I understand you guys are all there, Vikings, whatever. But come on, man. Let the black man from Africa play, man. We didn't concede. So cool. But if it went the other way, we're gonna be very angry with him. You know what I mean? For picking off, you know. But didn't turn out badly. So let's, as he said, that point is only good if you win the next game. So let us see tomorrow. And if we win that game tomorrow, Fulham has been it's shown against Liverpool. It's shown against Chelsea. It's a tough team to play, especially at Craven Cottage. It'll be a tough fixture.
Yeah.
Tilo, do you think it reflects like a lack of confidence from Solskjaer and the players that he has at the moment to go to a game like that where, you know, the majority of us in this group had thought Man United should be coming out to fire and win the game and take 3 points from Liverpool because of the circumstances they find themselves in. Do you think the manner in which they approached the game, it looked like as if they were respectful of a Liverpool and being at the Kop, and they kind of approached it in a sense where if they don't concede, if they get a draw, it's good enough. And going for a win would be far from like the rationale.
Yeah, man, I think that's for Solskjaer to I think gain some confidence back, I guess. You know, I think maybe sometimes as well this season he hasn't done really well in the big games. Maybe you know, the PSG game at home, the Leipzig game away. But I think he needs to have confidence in the players that he has, especially if you are building confidence as a team. I think maybe yes. First, in the first half, you do set up in a certain way, right? But in the second half, I think you can change certain dynamics of your team to try and get on the ball more. So, for instance, if he had brought a Pogba into the midfield in the second half and then made a sub maybe and take off McTominay and bring on Cavani, for instance, for McTominay, then at least you're changing the pieces in your lineup. You know what I mean? You're playing, you're still having maybe the same shape, but just changing the pieces where you're trying to be a bit more adventurous, which he didn't do. He probably did it a bit too late when he did eventually try to make the subs. But I think he's probably taken a knock in terms of confidence wise in the big games,
which isn't good. Yeah.
No, which isn't good. Which isn't good. But in the second round of fixtures, we have to go away to Spurs, Arsenal, Chelsea, Man City, and host Liverpool. So in those second round fixtures, he can't have 5 points only in draws. He needs to come out of those five fixtures with 10 points out of 15 if he wants to go win the Premier League. You know, you can't get 5 out of 15. You need to get 10 out of 15 minimum.
Right, and before we move on to the next game, one last thing. I think a great comment there from Scott, and I fully endorse this. He says he thinks the Martial debate has been settled. Cavani should start every week.
Can I say something about that? Marcus Rashford was the worst attacker for Man United this weekend, but no one is saying that in the English media. It's a bias towards to English players and always criticizing foreign players in the media. It's happening too often. When De Gea, they've been on De Gea's case, Martial's case, Bruno's case now, all of a sudden, they've been on Pogba's case, but I've never, ever heard one bad thing about Marcus Rashford's performances, which is disgusting because Marcus Rashford was so poor, always on offside. Martial at least tracked back and kept Trent quiet defensively. He was working hard, but Rashford did nothing that game.
I think Kellen Wilson's better than Martial. I think he would score goals for Man United. He's more of a natural finisher. He will score goals for Man United.
Okay, guys, the Man City Crystal Palace game.
Look at this. This shows that people view matches differently and also people have certain biases. You know what I mean? I look at what Scott says there, right, as a bias, you know, and saying that he viewed Martial's performance differently. Whereas if you look at the position that Martial was playing, he was there to mark Trent first and foremost, which he did. He tracked back. And then also to contribute, his link-up play was much better than Rashford. But hey, I'll have a segment just to talk about Man United soon. We're gonna launch it soon. Just waiting for that.
you heard it first on the cooldown, guys. Selo's coming out with his own Devils United show, so stick around for that.
I'm gonna host it with Scott. Marcus and Nicholas Killers, we can have the four Man United fans.
I want to be far away from that conversation. Okay, let's talk about the Man City Crystal Palace game. And why we need to speak about it, guys, is because the bookies have made them favorites to win the league. They came out there, they did the business, they scored some banging goals. John Stones has been a revelation, let's be honest. Laporte's sitting on bench, guys, because Ruben Dias and John Stones are doing the thing. Moussa, how do you think it shaped up for the guys? And, you know, I know we're going to talk about who we think the title winners are going to be, but in this game in particular, John Stones has really come leaps and bounds, considering he's also one of the players that we're all looking at, like, as, you know, surplus to requirements, and they're going to kick him out of the club.
Yeah, true, man. And then to go from there to score his first Premier League goal and then score his second 4 minutes later is quite a revelation for him, you know. I think Man City this year are showing the power of what Pep can do. If you look back to Man City about a month and a half ago, we were all writing off Pep and we're looking at if things are going to work with them without having that out-and-out number nine. But now the boys are looking sharp. They're looking fluid. They're looking like they can be the Man City that we saw two seasons ago where you could see these type of results. You know, you get the 4-0s, the 5-0s. As soon as they get on the front foot, it looks like a Man City's ready to now bang in more goals. And yeah, credit to Pep. Credit to Pep and his philosophy at the club. A lot of players are coming up and putting their hands up and he's giving them the opportunity. You know, we haven't been looking for Aguero as much as we thought we would have at this point in the season. And that's credit to him and the players that he's put on the field. De Bruyne is looking, a couple of weeks back, he was looking like he was moaning and looking groggy and looking like he wasn't ready to play. But now he's looking like one of the best players in the Premier League. And that's all comes down to the management, the staff and the players. You know, their contribution to the team has been epic. And now they have a strong fighting chance, actually, to take this league. I think they're only 1 point United with the game in hand, which is credible for where they've been this season, you know. So I think Man City are really looking the part. We could go on to take it.
I think it's quite interesting. I mean, I remember, like Moss is saying, we were chatting about, I think it was when Guardiola signed his contract, his renewal, and he was in that little bit of a rut. And I think we had said that sort of him signing that contract might have sort of saved him in the sense where they're saying, listen, just go on and do your business. But I think this league is, and I think we can all agree, everyone can agree, is it's madness. I mean, anybody can. I think 9 teams have been top of the log this season. That's unheard of. So, you know, you've got a Man City that is on form. And I think I am going to sort of take pride in saying that I did say that you can't write them off. You cannot write a Pep Guardiola squad off. Yes, you know, there's 4 or 5 teams here that could win the league. Yes, there's maybe in our own minds, maybe 2 or 3 that probably will go the distance. But a Pep Guardiola has done it before. So, yes, Claudio, I agree with you. I mean, I think, and together with Mossa, you know, who's going to stop them? You know, possibly a Liverpool, you know, possibly a lucky packet in terms of Man United or Spurs. You know, it is no, but it is anyone's league at the moment. You know, you've got a league this year where next week, you know, you'll see Man City lose it and then we'll be talking a completely different game because they lost their next game and we'll be like, can they win the league? But then the next week they'll win convincingly and then we'll be back at this conversation. So it is very temperamental, but you can't write them off. You really can't.
Yeah, and at this stage, they're the only team to have put 5 wins in the trot. So, and that's how quickly you can climb, like you said. That's the reality. And I think that's where my comment going back, and we're not going to talk about United, but just saying, if we're looking at, arguably speaking, in terms of if we're looking at where they are, United, you would say that they're arguably ahead of schedule in terms of how they're performing and where they're at in the table. That just shows you that it is up for grabs and, you know, people should be going for it. And Scott says something, Nick. He says, speaking of people signing contracts, is there anything you want to say? Have you dotted the line yet? Or was the announcement just the announcement?
What contract are we talking about? I'm not sure. He was speaking about boats. I was in Camps Bay. I was in a nice nice little spot there, just chilling out. So I don't know what anyone's talking about.
The buddy's already come in. It's a sign of bonus.
It must be reckless. It must be reckless. Like
a bed, living a little bit.
I was invited. Just relaxing there. Jason will know about my contract. He was my boss last year. So, Jason, you can tell us what happened there with the contract. So, no.
We'll have to get Jason on for a Liverpool segment we'll be launching soon. So.
I don't want to be involved in Liverpool. I'm just gonna hear family team.
Yeah, that's funny because it hurts because it's the truth. Wonga, you know, Arsenal did the business. Nick came out saying, categorically we can say, that he came out saying Newcastle are going to finish above Arsenal. And now, I mean, a 3-0 thumping, two games in a row, they've put Newcastle to the side. How are you feeling?
No, I'm feeling good.
Obama Yang, I mean.
But good to see. I mean, Aubameyang have two goals. I think, I was wondering how he was feeling because, I mean, yes, it's pretty much been dry this season for him. And I think, not one, but at least two for this match was good. I don't think Newcastle were the greatest team. It's like, I don't want to write them and say, like, it was almost like, you know, Fulham in the beginning of the season. I mean, we clattered them and we thought, oh, look, Arsenal are looking good. You know, we're moving around there and whatever. But, the future from those games actually told us that, look, Arsenal weren't really up for it. But it's good that we're on a winning streak now. And I think Arteta understands that. I think any manager in his position would understand that he needs to win it, and it's happening. I also like the fact now he's managing the injuries a bit better. I think before he was Partey, they were just trying to literally force him into every game. But, what's the point of him playing one game and then... Yeah, even that showed that, look, they just wanted this guy to be on the field. I mean, like, look, I've paid this much, but and it's like, I get it, okay, you trust the guy, but let him get to 100% before he starts. And Martinelli as well is also being cautious about him as well. Partey is giving him 60 minutes this game. I think the game before he gave him a bit less, and he came towards the end. He didn't start the game. So I think they are managing it a bit better. But,
how brilliant the result.
Have you heard
that?
How brilliant is Partey for the squad? A lot of the play was coming through him, and he was in the intensity up.
You can see he's been playing at a higher level than most of the team, man. It's just
I hope it comes. You see, if Partey is always playing and he's and you're getting teams like that, a player like Xhaka can hide. Doesn't have too much really. I just get like it's just possible back, and for me, no, he needs to be exposed. Like, we need Partey and someone else.
But Xhaka has, like, do you guys beat Chelsea? Who scored a free kick?
You know what I'm looking at? And he scores it. No, you're right.
Give Xhaka his credit because at least the fact that you win on Boxing Day, right? Xhaka was quite integral, and then the wins. Xhaka was quite integral. I think I understand the guy is not the best player in the league, man, but he's contributed to Arsenal being where they are currently.
And that's why they mid table.
You see, the thing is that I'm thinking about.
Value just because he had a really good game against Chelsea.
That's what I'm saying is that look, that's Xhaka's story. He's against Man United, was it the year before? Was it last year? We banged in that goal and what's his name? De Gea was diving this way, but the ball was going the other way. Two seasons ago. And you see, it happens. That game, then another season. Yeah, so you can catch him there.
I just don't know how an Arsenal fan can get excited about beating a tired team like mine.
That's what I'm trying to tell you. That's what I'm going to. Let me get things together.
What world class players are we talking about? You know, the blind school would have beaten us last night. You have Steve Bruce. You have Steve Bruce directing those guys. It's like, go there. The bus is there. Walk in front of the bus and get hammered like this. That's what they do. That's what he's doing. So I wouldn't. Anyone who beats us at the moment, I wouldn't get too excited. Measure yourself against. You're still the younger brother of the North London teams. Just remember that.
But you see, that's exactly now I'm getting to the Xhaka thing. Is that even in this game, he's quiet, doesn't do much. Xhaka against if Arsenal, let's say, even now, we were saying top four. I was saying it definitely begin the season. Then we end up down there. Now we're picking up games, and to be honest, Chelsea was probably. The biggest challenge we had during all those games, and we did clean out, and we caught them at the right time, to be honest. But for me, I just long-term, I think we need to look, if you're looking long-term, if let's say Smith Rowe gets injured now, I understand maybe transfer window, why just not there, but Smith Rowe gets injured, what are you going to do? If Saka gets injured, you're going to pull on Willian. Willian's tired. They put Willian on the last minutes. He's still looking. They even now, you can see they're trying to play him in the back in his original position, where he was playing centre attacking mid, literally was a direct swap. Still, I mean, Newcastle were 3-0 down. You'd think you'd be driving to score a goal, maybe. Still, nothing there. I really can't see anything. Pepe, been talking now a lot about him now. You know, I was excited about him. Eesh, nothing there. I really wonder if we get injured.
Another injury now.
Just two up front.
Yo, 72 million gone down the drain. You on my team.
Yeah, no, that's what I'm talking about, and we that's why I say we're fortunate. We've got these. It's good that Arsenal has. It's good that we have actually gotten the 3 points from these games because we needed that. But now those guys get injured. What happens then? And I'll always say, Chaka, I don't think for long term, I don't think he's the right guy in that position. I don't think Partey. Yes, going forward, Partey. Yes, and if Partey gets injured, we've seen it. What happens? Who's there?
We put on our name. Was there.
No.
Ceballos until apparently Real Madrid wants to call him back. Yo, he's
true. He's dreaming about Real Madrid back. Yeah, but that's you see Madrid's policy. With Madrid, I know is that they always give all these guys that come from them. They always sort of give them the academies. Their policy is that we sell you guys out if you don't make it in the team. They will literally sell you, loan you, even sell you. And then there's always the first option. If someone wants to buy you or whatever, the first option is always to come back before they do anything else because everyone wants to play for Madrid. That's their thing.
But Nick, can I please...
Jason.
Nick, what is the starting lineup like, bro? I was confused, bro.
Can I start?
Yes, you can vent. Okay, vent. Sorry, Newcastle.
Before you vent, the guys are asking, let's talk about the Ozil situation. And I think quickly, let's sum it up as to they've terminated his contract, he's gone off to Fenerbahce, Wonga, Matt, Mossa, and that way. Let's talk about what we think about this.
Did he go for free? Conclusion.
Yeah, for free. They've terminated and he's gone for free.
Yeah, so I think even Ozil, the way Ozil handled it, I've always said, I think whatever's happening, what Arsenal did to him is very scandalous. And also the way he's handled it, the way Ozil handled it is professional, professionalism to the T. So always said it, even now when he's moved to I think he tweeted today saying that, I mean, you know, he's missed Arsenal. Arsenal always be his number, will always be his number one club, even after the nonsense they did to him. And I'll just like to wait and see. I know many soccer players do it after a while as they release an autobiography or a biography of some sort to see whether he does open up about the situation and how he opens up about it. I'd be really interested to see what went down there. But again, I say up to this point he's been professional and I like that about him. Hasn't put Arsenal in the dirt at all.
But what's going to happen to Gunnosaurus now? Does he get the sack?
Who's making salary? Who's making salary?
Is he going to go to Fenerbahce as well? Be the Fenerbahce Gunnosaurus? Like, I don't know.
Yeah, that's a good question, bro. And I never actually looked at that one. But I wonder because he actually came back because of Mesut Ozil.
Yeah, Ozil was paying his wages. So, I mean, how did he get rid of this Gunnosaurus that they released? Ozil, you know, the director.
Okay, yeah, but let me not go on at that point. I think I've said enough about.
But you're right, man.
Ozil.
It's super scandalous what has happened to his career at Arsenal, man. He's a prolific player. He contributes as much as he can. Yes, he doesn't always look like the fittest player on the field, but you do know he's a jersey number 10 that can give you something and create opportunities for you as well. Yeah, and now they've got very good replacement in this youngster Smith Rowe, but he also should at least be on the bench, right? He's contributed. Yeah,
thanks for tuning in, man. Sorry to interrupt you, Mosa. As you were, everyone just say cheers to Tabang.
Cheers, Tabang. Thank you very much.
Cheers. All right, as you were, Mosa.
Where was I? I'm joking. But like he has contributed so much to the football fraternity, and he didn't have like ill discipline off the field, which potentially those comments which he had raised could be the scandalous ones. But that's it, man. He's been a really good player for the club. He's done as much as he can for the club, and he hasn't gone off in terms of his own personal fitness and his own personal demeanor. For them to have treated him in that manner was kind of unfair, and this I think is the silver line on the cloud, because we can then get to see a little bit more of Ozil in the next coming months. You know, we can get to see him play and see what he can contribute. Maybe, who knows, in the next two or three seasons he'll be back to a league like the English Premier League, German League, or even the Spanish league, doing what he does, if that could happen.
All right, Nick.
But Nick hasn't vented, guys. We need to give him the opportunity.
That's kind of where I was going now. Nick, tell us how you feel about this whole Steve Bruce ordeal, man.
Yeah, listen. The boys, you won't understand how I feel, but it's okay. So I'm going to give you a minute or so of how I feel. You know, I'm a little bit pissed off. I'm going to be very honest with you. Pissed off with, you know, fans, and I'll maybe sort of suggest that fans that we talk in general will sort of suggest, together with pundits, that Steve Bruce has done an all right job. You know, he's done a better job, or at least the same as Rafa Benitez. Okay, let me start somewhere. Okay, he took over, Rafa Benitez took over from a Steve McLaren sinking ship. You know, very, very closely sort of saved us. We got relegated. He stayed with us. We got promoted. And you know what? He had the same squad. He stayed up, and he did all right. He did, I think we finished 14th first season, and then we finished 11th the next season. The comparisons now are coming that Newcastle fans are spoilt and they don't actually understand what they want, because Steve Bruce has given the fans exactly the same as what Rafa Benitez has given. No, it's not. No, it's not. And why I say that is because Steve Bruce has been given £100 million more to spend. £100 million more. And that's why I'm pissed off with a Gary Neville coming onto Sky Sports last night blaming our owner. Yes, our owner is a problem. But Steve Bruce has no cooking clue. I was going to swear there. Fucking clue.
Why is it so shy? Don't be that angry.
Let's keep watching.
How our club should be run, okay? And you know what? I look past the fact that he managed Sunderland, but you know what? Stuff him. He went and managed the opposition. It's like Wenger going to manage Spurs. It's unwritten, you know. It shouldn't be the case. It's like Alex Ferguson going to manage Liverpool. So you know what? I've written him off. The man has no clue. He sets up again with five at the back against the worst team in Premier League history that have started a Premier League season. 18 games, and they've got 1 point or 2 points. And we set up with five at the back. Are you joking? And to conclude, in that game, we had 30% possession. Who is at fault here? Can you tell me that our squad is inferior to Sheffield United? Can you? Okay. Yes, we lost 3-0 against an Arsenal team, but we didn't even try. We didn't even try, and I know I'm speaking a lot, but Steve Bruce has
to. Right,
and no, it is right. Before, and what I'm saying to you is, before it's too late. Okay, Steve McLaren was replaced by Rafa Benitez in the beginning of March, and we got relegated. We are only a month and a week away from that period. And I'm telling you right now, if we do not act now, Newcastle United will be in the championship, and I won't be on the show next season.
100% you won't be on the show. He won't be on the show. How can we have
a beautiful show? There's going to be a show.
He's
going to
be
a show.
No, but he's
on the show, Jim.
He's not wrong. He's
on the show, bro. The man is facing the show. If he's coming to the show,
oh my goodness.
God. Oh, that's so real.
Guys, this is life or death. Yeah, come on.
It's not a championship show.
But you guys can understand why the man's so passionate, because there's a clause in his goal on his contract that says if they go down, he's out. I'd also be panicking.
Like, honestly, I see why you say sometimes, you know, you made that comparison between Callum Wilson and Martial, because he has to do so much more at a club like Newcastle to actually get in contention to score goals versus when he's at, or versus players who are at Man United. Newcastle just don't create opportunities. It's like, they have to literally try and find the ball as much as possible to try and create something. And that must be difficult for players to play there.
And you know what?
Sorry, Nick. Matt's got a friend there. Special shout out there. Let's welcome Carlo. Carlo.
Still a bit. Come on, yeah, Carlo.
Just to summarize, like the biggest thing. Okay, Scott, you need to take it easy. But the biggest thing for me with Newcastle is, you know, we are, and I think Alan Shearer said it perfectly last night. And you know, a lot of pundits are saying, what do Newcastle expect? What do the fans expect? Yes, we've been in the Champions League. We've been in top half positions. And we've challenged for trophies. But you know, at the end of the day, we just want to try. We just want to have a little bit of hope. And you know, we don't want to have to be fighting off relegation every season. So I think for me, that is the biggest thing. You know, I think Rich is in the same boat as me. Rich is flying high at the moment because he's in the same boat. But what I'm saying is he's up there, but it's exactly the same situation. He's up there, but you know, it can swing very quickly. It can swing very quickly. You know, he's doing all right now, and then shit hits the fan, and he's in the same boat shouting on this platform, trying to keep his job, you know?
I think you make a serious point though, because you look at Newcastle's squad and there's some quality in there. Like, I don't think they've got the squad to kind of challenge top four or whatever, but they shouldn't be struggling the way they are. You know, you've got some quality players. I mean, as much as we mock you for digging Shelvey, he is a solid player. He does the job. I mean, he made some passes against Arsenal, and I was sitting there thinking, I hope Thiago's watching this, because that's some solid ball play. You've got Almiron, he's a quality player. He can do the job. You've got players that should be pushing you towards, and you should be in a position where you're thinking about European qualification, even if it's not happening. Whereas what's actually happening is you're constantly looking over your shoulder, like, are we going to get relegated again? Are we going to get caught by, lose to Sheffield? And that's a damning indictment on the management, not just the ownership, but the manager has got it.
Matt, you say that perfectly. And, you know, people, if you look at it right now, Sheffield United won last week, West Brom won last week, Brighton won last week. So we are looking over our shoulder right now. Yes, we're 7 points clear. But West Brom get a result tonight. Now we're in big shit. And, you know, people protect an English manager. And, you know, we were speaking about protecting English players like Rashford. But people protect an English manager like Steve Bruce, who's achieved absolutely zero in the game. You know, he was a half-decent player for Man United. And you got Gary Neville, who is his teammate, fucking telling the fans that, oh, no, it's not Steve Bruce's fault. Rafa Benitez was just as bad. Rafa Benitez, can I tell you what, has finished second in the Premier League. He's won the Champions League and he's won the La Liga. You can't even compare the two.
I've never seen a Newcastle fan get so passionate about a Liverpool manager. Thanks, Nick. Yeah. That's how you do it.
Steve Bruce is an absolute con. He is a con. And I tweeted something the other day, and I don't think any of us, not all of us saw it, but he literally said, I was an average player, but I made my career half decent because I was hard working. And maybe that is the same for my managerial career, because I'm not actually that good, but I work hard. And you know what?
Yeah, shocking.
He said that. I'll retweet it and I'll send it on the group later. What? He literally said in his press conference that he actually admits that he's not that good at management and at playing, but he compensates for his hard work.
But this, this is exactly why. But this, Nick, this, yeah, man, this is why he's got the job. But this is why he's got the job, because Mike Ashley's like, this guy's got zero expectation. I can tell him what to do and he's just happy to have a job. That's exactly what it is. And when you look at the performance last night, the issue of the performance last night is like, you're looking at the players and you're going, they're playing an Arsenal, and we can't even say that's an Arsenal of old. So they're playing an Arsenal that, you know, you can't get something if you take the game to them. But the issue is, you're looking at the players and you go, are they down tooling? Like, are they really like not putting in a shift for manager? Yeah. But the issue is, if the manager's coming out with comments like that, how are you meant to be inspired? You can't be inspired. Yeah. So unfortunately, you're right. If something doesn't happen soon, if they keep going in this trajectory, we're going to have to find a new player. We're going to have to sack you, Nick.
And you know what, guys? Honestly, you know it's very... No. You are. And honestly, we laughed. And you know, I laughed. You know, I laughed the first two times I got relegated. And I cried both the times when we got relegated. I actually sat in my room crying. As a fucking grown man, okay? And I actually said at this point in January and February that we would never get relegated. We're too big to get relegated. But I've learned my lesson now. Guys, I'll be very honest with you.
But it can happen.
I've seen this horror movie before. I've seen it before. And I'm sorry, but we're on the same sort of trajectory here. But now we've got... Solutions, Nick. What do you do instead? I'm going to hire the blonde, Scotty.
He's done. Nick's done. I can stop him with a cardboard cutout and wrap it beneath it, and the side will do better.
Right. I just want to talk. We're going to touch on two more things. Wonga, you have your say. Quickly, last final thoughts about Arsenal. And then we're going to discuss quickly, briefly, the Chelsea-Leicester sort of prospect in tonight and where that takes us. So, Wonga, go for it.
Before Wonga Smith Rowe, very similar to a Dean Wilkinson that we used to play with. You guys all remember.
Yes.
I think honestly he is someone off. You've got a player, and unfortunately, if you don't keep him, he will go to someone big because he is a player. I'll drop mic. I'm done.
Someone bigger, yeah.
Yeah, I think like
he doesn't deserve to be in a mid-table team like Arsenal.
This is the Champions League team.
Yeah, look, Arsenal have always said it's over probably more than 10 years now that it's always the youth are looking great for 10 years. And even at this stage, the youth looks good. But they just need to find that balance with obviously the more experienced guys as well. But I just think right now, Arsenal need to, especially if you want to at least stay above the water, as I'd call it, we need to have backups. If our guys get injured, we're in trouble. If we're lucky and we keep our guys fit throughout the season, I think we're good. But if we're losing any of those guys up front, whether it be Aubameyang, whether it be Smith Rowe, Saka, or Martinelli, we're going to just be in the same boat as well. So we're going to go back to where we were. So that's my comment on that. They just need to get some backup.
I think you guys also
step up.
West Ham just scored.
What's that?
West Ham just scored.
Oh.
Rick. He deserves it.
I think you guys are also fortunate to have Aubameyang scoring again, because I don't know if you guys watched, but before he scored his first goal, he had a very similar scenario to what happened to Timo Werner, where he scuffed his shot. And that was like a thing of, oof, if he keeps doing those, he might lose a lot more of his confidence. And the fact that he scored two goals in that game was proper. It's a perfect injection of like energy and a direction for Arsenal. So I think you're fortunate to have him scoring again, because I think you'll see a bit more of him coming into play and not relying on, you know, the youngsters to carry the team as players like Smith Rowe, like I've had to do over the weeks.
Yeah.
Right.
Who's winning the league?
What's that?
Who's winning the league?
Oh, no, no, we're going to save that for Thursday. We're just going to finish off for... I think that conversation... No, because I think that conversation will get... it will paint a clearer picture for us for Thursday, depending on what happens with this Leicester-Chelsea game. So, Matt, we're going to start with you. Then we're going to go settle on Nick, Mosa, and then Wonga. And we're just going to see... How do you think this game's going to play out?
I reckon it's going to be a really tough one for Chelsea and Lampard. I mean, look at how they were against Fulham. They've got a lot. If they play, and you said it more so, they play like they did against Fulham, they're really going to struggle. And I think that if Leicester turn up and do play at the peak of their performances, I mean, the form they're on, if they just keep going the way they're going, I think it's going to be a Leicester win. I don't think it'll be a complete walkover. I think it'll be 2-1 or something like that. But on current form, it looks like Leicester are going to take this. I think that's going to be a really big challenge for Lampard. I think that's going to pose some serious questions of whether he's the right man for the job. I don't know whether Avram Grant has rocked up and pulled away all his Hawaiian shirts yet. I don't know whether that's happened. Maybe he's got the latest update. But I think there'll be more pressure on that if he doesn't win tonight.
I've got to make a meme out of it, don't I? Anyway, sorry.
Yeah. You know, that Hawaiian shirt, but thinking about it, you know, the weather's perfect for a Hawaiian shirt right now in South Africa.
I missed that. Someone explain that to me. What happened there?
No, hey, it was one of Claudio's home family-run business anecdotes again, saying that Lampard challenges that he's got too many shirts in the closet. I think he was referring to squad selection. And he was talking, and then I would say, yeah, Avram Grant's going to have to arrive there and make sure he doesn't put on a Hawaiian shirt and go to a press conference.
And today he gave us another banger. He says Christian Pulisic is what is a
Benjamin's PlayStation.
Dragon Ball Z. Did he say Dragon Ball Z?
Gareth Bale.
Dragon Ball Z.
He's at that point now where he's got the family, he's tired of being angry, he's got nothing to prove, his hair's not blonde anymore, and that's where he's playing golf. Okay, yeah. So what do you think is going to happen tonight, Till?
Hey, man, I you know, the Leicester in the previous game against Southampton, right? That first half, they weren't the better team, but they just got a chance, and obviously they finished the chance. And it seems like Leicester is just like a... You know how top sides are. You know, they don't perform well, but they end up winning somehow. You know what I mean? And Southampton had the better chances, but just weren't clinical and weren't just doing the making the right final ball. So I think they have a lot of confidence. Their best players are back. Pereira's come back. He was on the bench. Xianchu came on. Didi starting. You know what I mean? So I think it'll be a 2-1 victory to Leicester.
Yeah, I'm going to go with a 2-1 win for Chelsea. I just think Chelsea, obviously, from their win, I do think that they didn't play the best they could, and I think it's sort of something they can build on. Newcastle played against Leicester, and Leicester were dead average. They did beat us. I mean, it's not sort of easy to beat us. Yeah, it's not hard. And, I mean, Andy Carroll scored. So, you know, that means that there are holes in that back line. So, I'm going to go with a 2-1 win for Chelsea.
Thank you very much, sir.
I do think if Chelsea have players playing like, the style of Martial, you know, they might struggle, but if they're not like Martial, then we're okay.
Right, Mosa, what are you going to happen?
Yeah, this show, so much slander. So much slander.
This show. Callum Wilson, not Martial.
This show is the Martial, Firmino, Werner,
Wilson.
Bale, Bruce, I don't know who's rubbish at Arsenal. Shaka show.
Yeah.
I kinda like feel the same way Protocol feels about this game. Like, you know, that we had a really good opportunity against a team like Fulham to express how far along we have come in terms of our development and how the coach is putting things together with the players that he has at the moment. And that the win against Fulham wasn't convincing at all and never left Chelsea fans and Chelsea supporters in a position where we felt confident that Lampard has got it figured out for us. And I think going into a game like this with Leicester, it might be it might be difficult to contain them. I mean, if you do get one or two chances created by Jamie Vardy, by Madison, by Harvey, these guys can actually bury those opportunities and make a game of the occasion. And I think that's going to be the challenge for Chelsea today. If we don't come out with all guns blazing from the get-go, to give Leicester time and opportunity to play in a game like this will just create too many chances for us to contain. So I unfortunately, as a fan, must be honest and do see us losing this 1-2-1, unfortunately.
You know your football, Musa. Right, Wonga.
Look, it's for me, I'm going to be supporting Leicester today. I just think it helps us climb the league as well. But
that's the point, yeah.
And but I mean, honestly speaking, as well, I think I just think Leicester going to take it. They seem to be on a better. I'm going to just go by form, on a better form than Chelsea. But I mean, you know how the league has been, guys. It's been crazy. But yeah. According to next tomorrow could be four. I mean, tonight could end up 4-0 to Chelsea. You never know. But yeah, I'd go for Leicester to win it 2-0. I don't see Chelsea scoring.
Yeah. Okay. I'm going to finish it off. I'm going to say 2-1 to Leicester and set the cat amongst the pigeons. Just because I think deep down we'll talk about it on Thursday, and I could be proven wrong tonight, but I don't think so. That they will. They are title challengers, guys. They are. They're up there. They're up there. Final thoughts before we go, guys.
Steve Bruce out.
Is Ole out still a thing as well, though? Cello.
At top of the league.
We forgot about it, bro. We forgot about it. Eh? We forgot seven about that. We even forgot the fact that we're out of the Champions League, man. We'll be reminded when European football again.
Right, Wonga, final thoughts, sir.
I'll settle for Arsenal top six.
Arsenal top six.
Arsenal top six.
I want to see. I hope we remember this come end of the season. I want to see where Arsenal go. I think top six is a bold claim. It'd be a fantastic case of a dark horse. You know, a real mid-table club punching above their weight. You love to see it. You love to see it, but I don't think it's going to happen.
Right, and on that note, guys, if you don't know what to be,
be cool.
Be cool.
Thank you, guys. Have a good evening. Enjoy the football. We'll see you on Thursday.